constitute a criminal offense due to incitement to hatred for denying the Israeli regime's right to exist. The tide has now turned. The court dropped the charges a few days ago, arguing they violated freedom of expression. It ruled that it is lawful to carry signs showing maps of Palestine at demonstrations. The ruling comes only days after similar verdicts in Germany, where courts in Cologne and Munster ruled that the slogans "From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free," "Child murderer Israel," and "Stop the genocide in Gaza" can be freely expressed in the country. German police have previously used these slogans to prohibit protests for Gaza, creating worries that the free speech is under threat.
I'm here because I feel a duty to stand against the destruction of life, the environment, and dignity, because this destruction is being done in my name. And instead of making me safer, it's making it more dangerous for me to live in the diaspora.
While their governments stand staunchly on the side of the Zionist regime of Israel, thousands of people in Austria and Germany keep marching for Palestine. Experts say these demonstrations have placed some real pressure on European governments, pushing them to distance themselves from Israeli atrocities.
The court rulings are a welcome boost for the Palestine solidarity movement in Europe, where concerns are growing over a breakdown of Palestine supporters. Following recent court decisions, it is believed the coming year will see more and more demonstrations for Gaza. Dieter Reinisch, Vienna.
Iraq is marking the fourth anniversary of the assassination of General Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis. During an event attended by high-ranking Iraqi and Iranian officials, the two commanders were prized as a role model for all generations.
Today we stand alongside our Iranian brothers to remember our leaders General Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, whose memories are engraved in our minds. And although they are gone physically, their thoughts are still with us.
Former Iraqi Prime Minister Nour al-Maliki admired the two leaders and their role in the fight against terrorism in the region. The chief of Iraq Popular Mobilization Units, Faleh al-Fayyad, also addressed the ceremony. He said the role of General Qasem Soleimani and his companion was essential in standing against Daesh. Several Iraqi lawmakers were also present at the event. They said the two commanders' determination to fight against terrorists irritated their backers.
Today we remember the pure souls that fought against terror and defeated something that made terror supporters mad. That's why they committed such a cowardly act of killing our leaders in Iraq.
They expect that by assassinating our leaders, they will weaken our resistance, but they have failed to achieve their goals, and even after committing their cowardly act, it did nothing more than adding strength to us.
The attendees also condemned the latest attacks on anti-terror forests in Iraq and Syria, which led to the martyrdom of Sayyid Razi Mousawi. They demanded an immediate end to the U.S. military presence in Iraq, and they argued that this is the only solution to stop the continuous attacks on Iraqi forces and end violations against Iraq's sovereignty. They also expressed their solidarity with the Palestinians and condemned the Israeli war on Gaza. A huge crowd have gathered today to commemorate the fourth anniversary of the assassination of General Qasem Soleimani and Al-Hajj Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis. The legacy of the anti-terror icons continue to live on, inspiring people in the region to stand up for the oppressed. Muslim Salim, Baghdad.
The journalists have found themselves stalked by the indiscriminate Israeli strikes, which so far have claimed the lives of over 100 journalists working for different media agencies across the globe. Journalists believe the regime is deliberately attacking them and that they are paying the price of covering the Israeli massacres and atrocities committed day and night in Gaza and putting on display the really brutal face of the Israeli occupation. This undoubtedly has limited the chance of the Israeli propaganda machine to whitewash the murder of Palestinian children and deceive people outside the occupied territories on what is really going on.
The Israeli occupation is still practicing this genocide against the Palestinian people generally and the journalists particularly. Till this moment, the Israeli army has deliberately killed 105 journalists who were doing their job of covering the Israeli crimes. And the reason behind that is to curb the coverage of Israeli crimes. In addition to that, it destroyed 96 media agencies in Gaza.
The sufferings of the Palestinian journalists in Gaza are not limited to the Israeli attacks. They are also grappling with the disastrous humanitarian conditions they are experiencing along with their families. Many of them lost their houses to constant Israeli bombardments and joined the displaced people in Gaza, who are estimated to comprise over 80% of the region's population. All they have now are small tents created of pieces of plastic, wood, and fabric, or at best, glasses in the normal schools, which are supposed to be safe, but have been repeatedly targeted by Israel.
We, the Palestinian journalists, consider ourselves standing on the same front beside the resistance members on the battlefield. Our battle is to show the world the reality of Israeli massacres despite the ongoing crimes against journalists and the catastrophic humanitarian conditions in Gaza. As you see, I live here in this press van. It's really hard to fulfill your basic needs even when it comes to going to the bathroom. My family fled to the schools and they faced the same hardships.
Journalists in Gaza have to deal with many problems when trying to prepare a simple report on the situation in the Strip. Many cannot even find a chair or a desk, and hence they cannot perform journalistic tasks smoothly, making matters worse. Most of the time there is no internet in the Strip, and journalists cannot communicate with the world.
As a Palestinian journalist, similar to all my colleagues, we live in a very complicated situation. Even though we are chased by the Israeli strikes and killings, we find ourselves obliged to forget about the difficulties we face in every aspect of life due to this onslaught for the sake of reporting the truth. I assure you that every single one of the 2.3 million Palestinians here has his or her tragedy, and this includes us. Our daily life is horrific and unimaginable at all levels.
Like all the other Gazans, many Palestinian journalists in the besieged district have been killed brutally by the Israeli bombardments, and those who are still alive continue to suffer from the unlivable conditions in the region. Mati Abu Msabih, the central area of Gaza Strip.
Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah has slammed Israel's assassination of senior Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps advisor Sayed Radi Mousavi in Syria. Hezbollah called it a flagrant and brazen attack and a transgression of borders. Deputy head of Hezbollah's executive council told Press TV that General Qasem Soleimani had predicted that Sayed Radi would be assassinated in the battle to liberate al-Quds.
His martyrdom was only a matter of time. He was a man who had spent his youth on sacrifice. He was always ready to offer whatever assistance was needed to the resistance groups. This assassination will not stop the path which Sayed Radi al-Mousavi has opened for us. It will not stop us and other resistance groups in the region from continuing to walk in this path. We will remain on the battlefield to face this enemy which is occupying and looting our land. And with the blessing of the martyrs, the future will witness a new victory for the resistance in Gaza and the region.
Palestinian resistance factions Hamas and Islamic Jihad also said in a statement that the assassination of Brigadier General Radi Mousavi on Syrian territory is a crime and a cowardly act that threatens security and stability in the region. The Palestinian resistance groups lauded Sayed Radi for his role in supporting the resistance in Palestine.
We know that he was very close to General Qasem Soleimani and therefore worked closely with the Palestinian resistance groups and all resistance groups in the region. His efforts were based on the same school of thought as General Soleimani, and he walked in the same path which they had opened together. Today, we can see the result of these efforts in Gaza and the West Bank.
The Iranian cultural advisor in Beirut said General Mousavi was considered as a man who devoted his life to the Palestinian cause and finally sacrificed it for the sake of Al-Quds.
Sayyid Radhi Mousavi, God bless his soul, was one of the great leaders in the IRGC who devoted his life to support the honorable resistance in the region, especially in Lebanon and Palestine. Therefore, he is a part of every blessed bullet or rocket that is being fired to target the criminal Zionist regime, whether in Palestine or Lebanon.
Sayyid Radhi is now seen as a regional leader and martyr, just as General Soleimani. He is regarded by many as a martyr in the long battle for the liberation of Al-Quds. On the martyrdom anniversary of General Qasem Soleimani, the resistance front has bid farewell to another leader. Sayyid Radhi Mousavi's role in supporting the resistance groups of Lebanon and Palestine was significant. However, for the resistance, martyrdom is another form of divine victory. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps has vowed to take tough revenge on Israel for assassinating a senior Iranian military advisor in Syria. IRGC spokesman Ramazan Sharif made the statement during a press conference held in the Iranian capital, Tehran. He blasted the Monday Israeli missile attack on Damascus that targeted Brigadier General Sayyid Razi Mousavi's residence in the Sayyid Zainab neighborhood. He also described the assassination as a continuation of Israel's violation of international laws, calling on the international community to stop the crimes of the occupying regime, which endanger international peace and security. When asked about Tel Aviv's motive for committing this heinous crime, Sharif said the regime is seeking to expand its genocidal onslaught on Gaza to the entire West Asia region.
One of the reasons is that the Israeli regime wants to extend the scope of the war beyond the borders of Palestine, and they want to deflect public attention from the Gaza war. The second point, which is important, is that the Israelis try to show off their aerial dominance. Maybe these are the two main reasons because of which the assassination was committed.
The IRGC spokesman warned that Israel must wait for a direct or indirect response as Iran reserves the right to counter the Israeli assassination. He added, the martyrdom of the Iranian commander will usher in a new era where the Zionist regime will be the loser. Sharif also touched upon the U.S. support for Israel, saying Washington is violating international law by funding and backing the regime's crimes in Gaza.
Definitely one of their strategies has been to change the Israel-Palestine conflict to Iran-America conflict. But as the wise leader of the Islamic Revolution said on the first day of the Al-Aqsa Flood operation, this operation was launched by Palestinians against Israelis, and the U.S. support for Israel is the reason why the regime continues to exist.
Brigadier General Sayyid Razi Mousavi was martyred by Israel while on an advisory mission in Syria.
Truth never dies, and today it's livelier than ever as the world is observing the Israeli crimes with open eyes, conscious minds, and bleeding hearts. No matter what the Israeli regime and its supporters do to divert the global community's attention from its aggression on Gaza, the whole world are unanimously calling for justice for Palestinians. Mahdi Abbasian, Tehran.
Syrian military, religious parliamentary and popular delegations, along with resistance representatives, visited the Iranian embassy in Damascus to convey their condolences for the martyrdom of Brigadier General Sayyid Razi Mousavi, the top commander of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps. The attendees condemned the heinous crime committed by the Israeli regime and expressed unwavering faith in the victory of the resistance.
This is a criminal act and an evidence of bankruptcy. When they failed in confronting the resistance, they resorted to assassinations. It is well known that their agenda is to target resistance leaders in Gaza, but they have failed so far. They have been unable to achieve any meaningful results except for killing innocent civilians.
I express my condolences and congratulations on behalf of the Syrian president for the martyrdom of Sayyid Razi. The price of victory and resistance are these martyrs who join thousands of martyrs of the Syrian army and all resistance forces in Lebanon and Iraq. This is the fruit of the struggle and real work to restore our usurped rights.
In a heartfelt tribute, participants spoke highly of Commander Mousavi and his significant role as an official of logistical support for the resistance front, while resistance leaders confirmed that his blood will not be in vain.
Rather, it will inspire the peoples of the region to resist more than ever until the Israeli regime is fully defeated, along with its United States supporter.
As for us, the Islamic resistance in Iraq, by the permission of God, we will have a response. Our military operations in support of Gaza are ongoing. The assassination of the martyr commander Razi Mousavi aimed to cut off the supply chains and hinder the great achievements made by the Axis of Resistance in supporting Gaza.
One of the pillars of the Axis of Resistance, who dedicated his life to serving people and defending their rights. He left a great impact on the souls of those who knew him. Participants remembered him as a generous, humble, and kind-hearted man. With profound grief and resolute determination to seek justice, they expressed their unwavering confidence that Iran would retaliate against the Israeli vicious crime. Syrians and Iranians share the same grief today, along with all fighters of the resistance front, as martyr Sayed Reza Mousavi was not only a military advisor who defended Syria, but also an icon of humanity and heroism. Ibrahim Wahdi, Damascus.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment.
The Supplication on Tuesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, and praise is His right, since Him deserves it, abundant praise. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of my soul, for surely the soul commands to evil, except as my Lord has mercy. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of Satan, who adds sins to my sin. I seek protection with Him from every wicked tyrant and unjust sovereign and conquering enemy. O Allah, place me among Thy troops are the victors, and place me in Thy party, for Thy party are the ones who prosper. And place me among Thy friends, for Thy friends no fear shall be upon them, nor shall they sorrow. O Allah, set right for me my religion, for it is the preserving tie of my affair. Set right for me my hereafter, for it is the abode of my permanent lodging, and to it I flee from the neighborhood of the vile. Make life an increase for me in every good, and death an ease for me from every evil. O Allah, bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and the completion of the number of the envoys, and his household, the good, the pure, and his household, the good, the pure, and his companions, the distinguished. And give me on the Tuesday three things. Leave no sin for me, unless thou forgives it. And leave no grief unless thou takes it away. And leave no enemy. And leave no enemy unless thou repelst him. By means of in the name of Allah, the best of the names. In the name of Allah, Lord of earth and heaven, I seek to repulse every hateful thing, the first of which is his anger. And I seek to attract every lovable thing, the first of which is his good pleasure. So seal me with forgiveness from thee, O patron of beneficence.
Now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, as 2023 comes to an end, this year will be forever remembered as the one which exposed the absolute hypocrisy of the rules-based system and all the organizations created under its umbrella. From women's rights to children's rights to free speech, all of these rights that many thought existed in the world, we've seen that they are null and void. When it comes to the collective West regarding the East and global South, this is especially true as we enter a new year and the Zionist genocide continues to take place against Palestinians almost 3 months after it started and is being met by collective silence and our inaction from the West to stop it. We're going to take a look at these last 2.5 months on the Spotlight. I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Richard Falk, former UN Special Rapporteur on Palestine Human Rights out of Santa Barbara, California. And Shabir Rizvi, political analyst out of London.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Well, thank you both for being with us. I'd like to start this off with Richard Falk. Well, you are a former UN Special Rapporteur on Palestine Human Rights. Did you ever think that you would be witnessing what you have been these last 2.5 months? This type of genocide and basically nothing being done to stop it.
My darkest form of imagination could not reach the horror show that we've been witnessing for almost 3 months, as you say. It's the most transparent spectacle of genocide that the people of the world have ever been exposed to. And the complicity of the global West, particularly the US and UK, shocks even a critic like myself, because it exposes not only the hypocrisy of the rules-based world, which was always very suspect. It was geopolitical rules for the powerful and some kind of accountability to international law for the weak. And now it has become something that is indulgent of genocide when it's committed by friends, and critical of human rights of any sort if they are attributable to adversaries or enemies. So we're at a very dark place in human history, I fear.
Yes, indeed. Well, Shabir, I mean, can you believe that you're still witnessing this genocide that started on October 7th, and we're about to start a new year, and it still hasn't stopped?
Hello, good evening. Thanks for the invitation. Firstly, condolences to the families of the martyrs, and also our sort of heartfelt pain for those who are suffering the amputations and all kinds of other bloodletting which is being inflicted on the Palestinians, both in Gaza and the West Bank. As I keep pointing out, that it's not just in Gaza that is taking place. Obviously, the numbers are horrendous. But as our friend from the USA said, we are at a dark place. Not only at a dark place, but just to quote William Shakespeare, when he said, "I'm sick when I do look at thee." He was really talking, Demetrius was speaking to Helena in a Midsummer's Night dream at that time. So it's really we feel the sickness when we look at our politicians, our media pundit in the legacy media in the West, and also all the chattering classes, that they really have not only abandoned, but actually the words that they used to use of human rights and of sort of freedom of speech and all kinds of flowery words, the veil has been removed, or veils have been removed from them very clearly. And I think people in the South and the East part of the world are realizing that these were not just hypocritical words, but they were words to hoodwink us into thinking that the West has some moral and ethical thinking behind it. But the reality is that now that we are seeing this happening on a daily basis, minute by minute, hour by hour, people are realizing that how inhuman the politicians are. They really have no heart at all, thinking about it. People keep on talking about that Israel has a right to defend itself. Yes, Israel has a right to kill babies. Israel has a right to murder over 100 journalists. Israel has a right to kill, 22,000 people. Israel has a right to kill pregnant mothers. Israel has a right to do all the heinous crimes that one could list. And, the list would be very long. But the reality is that Israel is being allowed to get away. But I think they are only going to get away for a limited period of time. I think come 2024, support that the Palestinians are getting globally from the ordinary people, not from the politicians or the elite or the chattering classes, as I said, but really the ordinary people are feeling that this cannot go on in the manner that it is. And again, the whole sort of hysterical Hezbollah, which is now being proven to be completely false, and lies upon lies, that again, that veil which has been sort of given to the world for the last 75 years has come off in the last, you know, less than 75 days. So people are realizing that it is just that, you know, Zionism is equal racism. Zionism is equal colonialism. Zionism is equal to imperialism. Zionism is really the, you know, dare I say, the problem in West Asia. It's not the Palestinians. Palestinians are the indigenous people of that land. And again, it's not a Jewish or Muslim sort of war. It really is a war against an occupier, an usurper, and a nation which is built on people who are not part of that land.
Okay.
And this is because
stay with me, Shabir. Stay with me, Shabir. Let me get Richard back in on this. Well, Richard, how did we get here? Or were we always here just that we can see clearer the reality? Because if we look at the rules-based system that was set up after World War II, and we see the veto power that the UN Security Council members have always had. Were we always here, but there was enough of the facade in place that people didn't understand it? Or what's your assessment of this, this difference between we see reactions, what happened, for example, when Russia invaded Ukraine, as opposed to the reaction towards the Zionist regime and what this genocide they're committing against the Palestinians?
Well, you're posing a really important series of questions, and there's no simple answer. I think, in one sense, the logic of the Zionist project always had an end game that is very destructive of the Palestinian people. It wanted a Jewish supremacy state that corresponded with a vision of biblical times, a kind of mythic promised land, and in a post-colonial era, to try to dispossess the indigenous people is really itself a major crime. And Israel has recently, with justification, been called the last settler colonial undertaking. So that's a background. And then in the foreground is the capture of the Zionist project by the most extremist elements in it, which couldn't complete the project without this kind of genocidal onslaught. And there's every reason to suspect that the Hamas attack of October 7th was allowed to happen and even facilitated in its execution by the non-arrival of the Israeli forces. The settler mentality that has captured the Zionist movement and has made its way to the pinnacles of power in Israel was seeking a pretext for what one might call a second Nakba, a second wave of dispossession and creating a final phase in the Israeli effort to take over the West Bank, which is the primary goal, and to perhaps reoccupy or at least depopulate Gaza. It now has some importance economically and strategically in relation to the Suez Canal, in relation to the offshore oil and gas. So there are economic reasons, and settlers on the West Bank are really real estate operators are promising coastline villas to Jewish resettlers in a new wave of settlement. So we don't know how the outcome will be phased. And then the hardest question, and the most important one in a sense, is the explanation of the complicity crimes committed by the Western countries. I think the whole relationship to the region was changed by two events. One was the Iranian Revolution in 78-79, and the second was the 1967 war, in which Israel, for the first time, emerged not as a strategic burden, which it had been in relation to the oil producers and to the Islamic world generally, but suddenly it became a strategic asset. And with Iran, the prior allied special friend under the Shah's rule, no longer present there, it joined these forces of support that had built up after the Holocaust for a Jewish sanctuary, a kind of liberal guilt in the West. I just want to say because it fused that liberal guilt with strategic military interests in the region. And created a new kind of commitment by the U.S. to Israel and going along with whatever Israel did, even to this extent.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Well, Shabir, when we look at what has happened since October 7th and the increase in pro-Palestinian activism in these Western countries and a greater awareness of Israeli crimes, and not only awareness of Israeli crimes, but the complicity of their own country's involvement, your assessment of where this will possibly go in 2024?
That's a very interesting question, because obviously, as we have been observing since day one, if you like, after 7th of October, there have been huge demonstrations in major European cities and in North America, Australia, and New Zealand. So it's becoming very clear that the ordinary masses are not in tune with the ruling elite in the respective countries. So there's a huge, if you like, a democratic gap that has been created. Secondly, what is happening is that the, as I said earlier, the effective, the hysterical Hezbollah was for the last 75 years letting people know that, Israel is sort of a land for the Jews because they were persecuted in Europe. And really, I find it quite extraordinary that if they were persecuted in Europe, perhaps a piece of land should have been found for them in Europe rather than in West Asia, which wasn't theirs to give. And, you know, just like, you know, the former Zionist ambassador to the UN holding the Bible, saying that this is our title deed to the land. And also, you know, Hannah Ashrafi famously said that, you know, she didn't know that God was a real estate salesman. So the reality is that, you know, they feel that when God needs to be brought into the conversation, then they will say that, you know, they're God's so chosen people and this land belongs to them. However, most of the Zionists are not believers in God. The founders of the Zionist entity did not believe in God. And, you know, famously, the Christmas sort of sermon, which was presented by Pastor Ishaq, really quite eloquently put it that the Bible has been weaponized. So all these things that have happened were really clouding the vision of the ordinary people over the last 75 years. But it has become very clear that these were all lies which were put forward by the spokespersons from the Zionist entity and their supporters in the media and the politicians giving diplomatic and political cover to the Zionist entity. So all this has really been undone. And there was an article in the Jerusalem Post not long ago, which was really saying that, you know, we worked hard for the last 75 years to tell the people one story, but within 75 days, the world is not believing what we were telling them.
Okay.
So this is quite an important aspect, which I think is a great remorse for the Zionist entity and their supporters.
Right, indeed. Well, Richard Falk, do you think the year 2024 will be one where the whole rules-based system will continue to be exposed and even start to disintegrate?
Well, I think it started to disintegrate before. It started with the new initiatives taken in the Global South, such as the formation of the BRICS, the rise of China, the effort of the U.S. to maintain the geopolitical dominance it had in the aftermath of the Cold War, the implosion of the Soviet Union. I think that all those factors were underway. It was a process of challenging this post-Cold War world that was underway. But now, with the events in the Middle East, that challenge is going to be intensified in 2024, and the outcome is not, of course, clear. The U.S. relies only these days not on rule-based principles, but on its supposed military superiority. And that's proved a disaster through ever since Vietnam, in Afghanistan, Yemen, Iraq, and several other places. So we're facing a very critical moment. And I fear that in 2024, if Israel gets backed into a corner and can't find its way out of this Gaza trap that it's made for itself, it will try to expand the war and draw these geopolitical actors into a much larger framework of conflict.
Okay. 30 seconds, Shabir. I'm so sorry, Richard. I got to give 30 seconds to Shabir. Shabir, where do you see this going as far as the Palestinian resistance? We have seen how successful they have been overall in the overall resistance. 2024.
Well, 2024, I believe, is going to be a positive outcome for the resistance. And of course, if Israelis, put into corner, they may react in a sort of a mad dog way. But I think the positive sign would be that already 500,000 Israelis have left the Zionist entity. And I think if the security situation becomes even more difficult, a lot more people will voluntarily leave the Zionist entity.
And on that note, I'm so sorry. Hopefully we can talk again, but we're out of time tonight. Richard Falk, former UN Special Rapporteur in Palestine, human rights out of Santa Barbara, California, Shabir Rizzi, political analyst out of London. Thank you both for being with us. Thank you for being with us on another Spotlight. Goodbye.
When the whole world is silent towards oppression, even one voice becomes powerful. IRIB English Radio, the voice of the voiceless. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. In the limelight.
A recent survey has revealed U.S. President Joe Biden's support has collapsed among young Americans, with 68% of those under the age of 30 saying he should not run again for president in 2024. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Newsweek magazine has covered the story and tells us more. According to polling data, President Joe Biden's current approval rating is lower than that of the last four presidents who failed to win a second term in office. Joe Biden's popularity among voters has been a major talking point in the 2024 campaign. His approval ratings, percentage-wise, has steadily been in the low 40s for most of his presidency. According to poll aggregator 538, it was at its highest point when Joe Biden first took office in January of 2021 at 53.1% and at its lowest point in July of 2022 at 38.2%. A recent opinion poll conducted by American Research Group from 17th to 20th of December found that 37% of Americans approve of Joe Biden's handling of his presidency, while 57% disapprove. The opinion poll surveyed 1,100 adults living in the continental United States and had a margin of error of 3 percentage points. Looking at how Biden's popularity fares compared to past incumbents who lost their re-election campaigns, he has a lower approval rating than Donald Trump, George H.W. Bush, Jimmy Carter, and Gerald Ford, at the same point in their presidencies. On the 1,074th day of Donald Trump's presidency, he had a 42.5% approval rating, compared to Joe Biden's 39.3%. Donald Trump later lost the 2020 election to Joe Biden. There will likely be a rematch between Trump and Biden in 2024, as Biden is a Democratic incumbent and Donald Trump is the current front-runner for the Republican nomination. Former Republican President George H.W. Bush had a 51.8% approval rating on his 1,074th day in office, which is 12.5 percentage points ahead of Joe Biden at the same point in his presidency. George W. Bush then lost the 1992 election to Bill Clinton, a Democrat. Biden's approval rating is about 10 percentage points behind former Democratic President Jimmy Carter's at this point in their presidencies. On the 1,074th day of the Carter administration, President Jimmy Carter had a 49.2% approval rating. Carter lost to Republican candidate Ronald Reagan in the 1980 presidential election. Former Republican President Gerald Ford lost the 1976 election to Jimmy Carter, but his circumstances were different. Gerald Ford, former President Richard Nixon's vice president, took office in 1974 after Richard Nixon resigned following the Watergate scandal. Gerald Ford was only president for 895 days. On his 855th day in office, he had an approval rating of 44.5%. On Joe Biden's 855th day in office, he had an approval rating of 41%. The British newspaper, the Daily Mail, has also covered this story and tells us more. A recent opinion poll shows 6 in 10 voters, including nearly one-third of Democrats, say Joe Biden should not run for president in 2024. Also, in a further alarming sign for Joe Biden, almost half of Democrats say it is not too late for the 81-year-old to be replaced as their party's nominee. The extensive survey conducted jointly by the Daily Mail and JL Partners poll showed 60% of the American public think Joe Biden should not seek re-election, with only 34% saying he should, and 6% expressing no opinion. Perhaps the most troubling revelation for the White House will be that even 29% of Democrats said Joe Biden should not run for president again. The latest set of alarming results for the Biden administration come less than 24 hours after a Daily Mail opinion poll revealed former President Donald Trump is ahead by 4 percentage points nationwide. The opinion poll revealed results for male and female voters were virtually identical. It showed Joe Biden's support has collapsed among young American voters, with 68% of those under the age of 30 saying he should not run again, the most of any age group. In every age group, over 50% of voters thought he should drop out of the race. Majorities of both college graduates and non-graduates also agreed. There were signs of Biden losing support in his Democrat base, with 59% of Hispanic voters and 49% of black voters saying he should not be the Democratic Party's nominee. And there were further worrying signs for the president, with 65% of independent voters saying he should not run again, with only 26% believing that he should. Winning over independents will be crucial if Joe Biden is to defeat the likely Republican nominee Donald Trump in 2024. The opinion poll showed more Democrats believe it is not too late to ditch Joe Biden than those who think the time has passed. It revealed 44% of Democrats think it is not too late, while 42% say it is too late. Among independents, 66% thought it was not too late to replace Joe Biden, and 71% of Republicans agreed. Majorities of white, Hispanic, and black voters all agreed it was not too late to find another Democratic nominee. Scarlett McGuire, director of JL Partners pollster, said voters continue to have serious doubts about Joe Biden's ability to mount another presidential campaign, while an astonishing 6 in 10 say that Joe Biden should not run for the Oval Office again, including 1 in 3 Democrats, she added. She added, there are clear concerns about the president's age and his time in office. Fox News Channel has also covered the same story and tells us more. According to a new National Public Opinion Survey, Only one-third of Americans gave President Joe Biden a thumbs up on the job approval rating he's doing in the White House. The president stands at 34% approval in a Monmouth University opinion poll released recently, with 61% giving Joe Biden a thumbs down on his job performance. The president's approval is at an all-time low in Monmouth University polling since Joe Biden took over the White House nearly 3 years ago. Americans questioned in the survey gave the president particularly low marks for his handling of immigration, 26%, and his handling of inflation, 28%. Patrick Murray, director of the Monmouth University Polling Institute, highlighted the Biden administration keeps touting their infrastructure investments and a host of so-called positive economic indicators. But most Americans are still smarting from higher prices caused by post-pandemic inflation. This seems to be what's driving public opinion. Patrick Murray spotlighted that there is certainly an element of partisanship in how people frame their own financial situation, which is based in part on who occupies the White House. But even a good chunk of Biden's Democratic base wish that he'd start paying more attention to their top priorities than he is now.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.